Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for this episode of Into the Killing. If you know of any interesting cold cases that were eventually solved and you'd like to suggest it, please visit our website, criminallylisted.com, then go to the Suggest a Case page. You can also suggest cases for our YouTube channels, Criminally Listed and Paranormally Listed. For this episode, we're going back to October 1999. October 12, 1999 was designated as the day of 6 billion by the United Nations Population Fund. According to their estimates, the world's population would reach 6 billion by that day. At the time, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan was in Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina, because he was monitoring the peace negotiations to end the Bosnian War. So the first baby born on that day in Sarajevo would be designated as the 6 billion person to be concurrently alive because Annan could be on hand to congratulate the parents. At 12:01 a.m. on October 12, 1999, Yasminko Mevic was born, and he was labeled the 6 billion person to be alive on Earth concurrently. However, not everyone agrees that on October 12, 1999, the Earth's population reached 6 billion. Some believe it happened months earlier, in June. The United Nations Population Fund later reviewed its calculations and believed the 6 billionth person was born a year earlier in 1998. 12 years later, in 2011, the Earth's population reached 7 billion, and 11 years after that, we reached the 8 billion mark. The current population of the Earth is about 8.175 billion. On Halloween Day, 1999, a 500-year-old conflict between Catholics and Lutherans was resolved. On October 31, 1517, Martin Luther nailed his 95 Theses to the All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany. This was the start of the Protestant Reformation. One of Martin's disagreements with the Church was about justification. Justification is the process of becoming right with God. Lutherans believe that someone is saved through their faith alone. Catholics believe that someone is saved through their faith in addition to living a good Christian life. For centuries, no one read doctrines from both Lutherans and Catholics. It was only in the 1960s that studies were done on both religions. Scholars in both religions realized that the basic belief was the same, that Christians are saved by their faith. So after much discussion, on October 31, 1999, 482 years after Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the church door, the Catholic Church's Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity and the Lutheran World Federation signed the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification. The document states, quote, "A common understanding of our justification by God's grace through faith in Christ," unquote. In 2017, three other branches of Christianity, the World Methodist Council, the Anglican Communion, and the World Communion of Reformed Churches, also affirmed the declaration. That same Halloween, at 1:20 a.m. EST, Egypt Air Flight 990, a 767 Boeing airliner, took off from John F. Kennedy International Airport in New York City. Its destination was Cairo, Egypt. 217 people were on board, including 14 crew members. 1:52 a.m., the plane slammed into the Atlantic Ocean, south of Nantucket Island, Massachusetts. All 217 people on board were killed. An investigation was launched. It was determined that before the plane crashed, it made two sharp dives. During one dive, the plane traveled faster than the speed of sound. The black box was checked. Just before the first dive, the captain, Ahmad El-Ashabi, stepped out of the cockpit to use the washroom, and the first officer, Jamil Albatoudi, was alone in the cockpit. While he was alone, Albatoudi turned off the autopilot. 11 times he said, "Tawakkaltu 'ala Allah," which can be translated into, "I rely on God," or, "I trust God." The American National Transportation Safety Board determined that First Officer Jamil Albatoudi crashed the plane for undetermined reasons. However, it's believed he took his own life and murdered 216 people. The Egyptian Civil Aviation Agency does not believe these findings and blames the crash on mechanical failure. On October 1st, 1999, the number one song on the Billboard charts was Unpretty by TLC. The number one movie was the legal drama Double Jeopardy. Sherry Dunn was born in Altoona, Pennsylvania on September 30th, 1976. She had a sister and two brothers. Their mother left the family when they were young, and they were raised by their father. Sherry was close with her siblings and father. In 1991, when Sherry was 14, she met the man who would become her husband, Aaron Leidy. Aaron was 3 years older than Sherry. They started dating, and a year after they met, Sherry was pregnant. Although Sherry was a teen mother, she graduated from high school in 1997. By the time Sherry was 22, she was married and had three children. Sherry loved being a mother and adored her children. Aaron was a truck driver and was frequently away from home. The marriage was tumultuous, and in 1999, Sherry left Aaron. However, she did not have enough money to get her own home. So she and her three children were living with Aaron's parents. Of course, living with your in-laws after splitting up with your spouse can be awkward. Sherry was working temp jobs and trying to save money so they could get their own place. In September 1999, Sherry was seeing a new man. One day, Aaron caught her talking to the man in the alley beside her parents' home. Aaron was upset and he got into a fight with the boyfriend. The fight was broken up and the boyfriend went home. Days later, on October 2nd, 1999, Sherry's sister, Shelly, hosted a birthday party for her son. 2 days earlier, Sherry had turned 23. Sherry's family was surprised when Sherry's estranged husband, Aaron, and his father arrived with the kids and Sherry wasn't with them. Sherry wouldn't usually miss an event like that. Also, Aaron and Sherry were separated, so it was odd that he came to the birthday party, especially without her. Sherry's family asked where Sherry was, and Aaron said he didn't know. Aaron's father, Kenneth, claimed she ran off and abandoned the children. This led to an argument between Kenneth and Sherry's father, Sheldon. Aaron, his children, and his father left the party shortly afterward. Sherry's family didn't hear from her that day or in the following days. This made them very worried. It was very unusual for her not to attend a family party, but it was extremely out of character for her not to contact them for an extended period. They were also deeply disturbed that Sherry had not contacted her children because they knew she would never have abandoned them. Sherry's mother had left her family when Sherry was young, and Sherry's family knew she would have never done that to her children. The Leidys claimed that Sherry had run away to Maine with her new boyfriend. Sherry's family thought she could have run away because she needed a break, but it still seemed very odd that she hadn't contacted anyone since leaving. Sherry's family wanted to check on her, but they did not know much about her new boyfriend. They had no way to contact him, especially if he had picked up and moved to Maine. But deep in their hearts, Sherry's family did not believe that Sherry disappeared on her own volition. They thought that Aaron was upset that Sherry was seeing another man, so he killed her and hid her body. After a month, no one had heard from Sherry, so her family tried to report her missing. But the police didn't take the disappearance seriously. They said that Sherry was an adult and had the right to disappear if she wanted to. They pointed out there were no signs of foul play. To the police, the disappearance of the 23-year-old mother of three was a non-issue. So they did very little in the way of investigating. Time, as it does, marched on. Aaron and his parents raised the children. They told the children Sherry was an alcoholic who had abandoned them. After Sherry disappeared, her family did not see her children much. Sherry's father, Sheldon Dumb, was heartbroken after his daughter disappeared. In February 2005, Sheldon died at age 57 without learning what happened to his daughter. In January 2011, something happened that led to the case being solved. A lot had changed in those 12 years. In 1999, the three biggest movies were Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, The Sixth Sense, and Toy Story 2. In 2011, the three biggest movies were Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, Transformers Dark of the Moon, and Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides. In 1999, the three most watched shows were all the same show. It was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which aired on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire premiered in August of that year, and it was based on the British television show of the same name that premiered a year earlier. ER and Friends were the fourth and fifth most watched shows. In 2011, Sunday Night Football, NCIS, and Dancing with the Stars were the most watched shows. The three biggest songs of 1999 were Believe by Cher, No Scrubs by TLC, and Angel of Mine by Monica. In 2011, the three biggest songs were Rolling in the Deep by Adele, Party Rock Anthem by LMFAO, featuring Lauren Bennett and Goon Rock, and Firework by Katy Perry. In 1999, Koshun Takumi published Battle Royale, Thomas Harris published Hannibal, and Julia Donaldson published The Gruffalo. 2011 saw the publication of Bossy Pants by Tina Fey, Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, and 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. But the most important change in the 12 years for Sherry's family was the launch of Facebook in February 2004. Sherry's sister, Shelley, started a Facebook page about her sister's disappearance. Not long afterward, Shelley received a disturbing message from a woman who had dated Aaron Leidy. She said that one of Sherry's children told her that their mother was dead. She was buried under an outhouse on farm property owned by the Leidys in the town of Warriors Mark, Pennsylvania. Warriors Mark is about 20 miles from Altoona. Shelley thought that this would be enough to start the investigation into her sister's disappearance, so she went to the police with what she had learned. But the police were indifferent. Also, an allegation from Aaron's ex-girlfriend about something his child said wasn't much in the way of evidence. But Shelley was still determined to find out what happened to her sister. The ladies had said that she went to Maine with her boyfriend. So in July 2012, Shelley decided to use Facebook to track down the man Sherry had been dating when she went missing. She was able to contact him. He said the last time he saw her was in the alley when Aaron caught them. He fought with Aaron and then Shelley ended their relationship. That was the last time he ever saw her. Once again, Shelley went to the police with the information. The police considered this information useful because it contradicted what the ladies had said happened to Shelley. So 13 years after 23-year-old Sherry Leidy went missing, the police started an investigation. The most obvious suspect was Aaron Leidy. He had a motive to kill Sherry. He was angry after he caught her with another man. Aaron was interviewed and he denied killing Sherry. But he admitted he was disturbed by her disappearance. He said that, initially, he believed she had run away with her boyfriend because it seemed plausible. But then, as the years went by and she never contacted her children, he began to think that something bad had happened to her. One lead the police wanted to follow up on was the message from Aaron's ex-girlfriend about Sherry's body being buried on the farm property the family owned in Warriors Mark. They asked Aaron's father, Kenneth, if they could look around the property. Initially, he said yes, but then he changed his mind and said they couldn't go on the property without a warrant. This left the police at a standstill. They had no evidence that Sherry was dead, let alone buried, on the property. But Kenneth's change of heart got the police thinking, what if Kenneth was somehow involved in the murder? Kenneth was the last person to see Sherry alive. He said he had driven her to work on October 1st, the day after Sherry's 23rd birthday. He then went to work himself. The police checked his work records and discovered he had not worked that day. Why had Kenneth lied about that? The police thought it was odd that Aaron cooperated with the investigation, but Kenneth never did. Then Kenneth lied about what he did on the last day Sherry was seen alive. The police talked to Sherry's family, and they said that Kenneth was creepy. He was touchy-feely with her. He would look under the covers when he thought Sherry was sleeping. He would also peek in the windows while she was changing. So the police began to suspect that maybe Aaron didn't kill his estranged wife. Instead, his father Kenneth had killed her. So the police asked Aaron if he would talk to his father on the phone while they recorded and try to get him to talk about Sherry. Aaron agreed to help the police. On April 19, 2013, Aaron called his father from the police station. Kenneth did not answer Aaron's questions and said he couldn't talk. He then ended the call. Hours later, Aaron called his father again. This time, Kenneth admitted he had killed Sherry. He claimed it was an accident. He said that her body was buried on the property in Warrior's Mark under a pile of rocks. Hours later, the police went to Kenneth's home. Kenneth refused to answer any questions. They told him they were going to bring him to the state police barracks. Kenneth surprised them by trying to run away and then tussling with a state trooper. He was arrested and charged with aggravated assault. In custody, Kenneth refused to talk. Kenneth's confession was not enough to charge him with murder. But based on the phone confession, the police obtained a warrant to search the property in Warrior's Mark. They began searching on April 20th, 2013. The problem was that the property was 150 acres. In the call, Kenneth said he had buried her under a rock pile. But there were many rock piles on the property. The police brought in 20 cadaver dogs. An anthropology team from Mercyhurst University in Erie, Pennsylvania also assisted in the search. But after 5 days of searching, they found nothing, so the search was called off. The police and the district attorney did not think they had enough evidence to convict Kenneth of murder. Kenneth had said Sherry's death was an accident. Without a body and an autopsy, they had no evidence to prove it was murder. So on May 10, 2013, they offered Kenneth a plea deal. If he confessed and led them to the body, he could plead guilty to third-degree murder. He would get a sentence of 7 to 14 years in prison. If he was convicted of first-degree murder, he could have been sentenced to death or life without parole. Second-degree murder had an automatic sentence of life without parole. So 65-year-old Kenneth agreed to the plea deal. Kenneth said that on the morning Sherry was killed, they argued as he was about to drive her to work. He had asked her if she was going to be a mother that weekend or if she was going to be a bar whore. Sherry swore at him and he replied by saying the same thing. He said he pushed her hard and she hit the right side of her head on his truck. She then fell to the ground and smashed the left side of her face on the pavement. He loaded her into the truck and started driving to the hospital. But she died along the way, so he decided to bury the body. Hours after he confessed, Kenneth went with the police to the property. They spent the day searching and found nothing. The next day, under a pile of rocks, 13 and a half years after Sherry Leahy went missing, they found her skeletal remains. The anthropologist who helped search the property examined the remains. He noted that the legs were bent in a way that the knees were under her chin. It was an unnatural position, and he believed that this was a sign that the body had been stored somewhere else before it was buried under the rocks. There was extensive damage to the right side of Sherry's head. The left side was also fractured, but not as much. The anthropologist did not think that the injuries were caused by her hitting her head against something like a truck. He believed that Sherry was struck on the right side of the head while her head was on the ground or against the wall. He thinks that Kenneth struck her with a blunt object like a baseball bat or a pipe. Kenneth was confronted with the findings. He said he struck Sherry with something, but he didn't remember what it was. In December 2013, 66-year-old Kenneth Leidy pleaded guilty to third-degree murder. In February 2014, he was sentenced to 7 to 13 years of prison. Sherry's family was very upset with the plea deal, especially because they were not consulted before it was offered. They did not think that someone who killed a person should only spend 7 years in prison. Kenneth had stolen his grandchildren's mother from them and then lied by claiming she was an alcoholic who had abandoned them. Police and the district attorney said that they made the plea deal because they believed they did not have another choice. There was a good chance that they may have never found the body, or at least not have found it during Kenneth's lifetime, and he might have gotten away with murder. So, to ensure Shelley had a proper burial, and to ensure that Kenneth served time in prison, they made the plea deal. When Kenneth came up for parole in 2020, Sherry's sister, Shelley, spoke at his hearing and pleaded with the parole board not to release him. Kenneth was not granted parole. Shelley has continued to advocate to keep Kenneth in prison. She started an online petition that has over 34,000 signatures at the time of this recording. Kenneth was last denied parole in February 2023. The reasons include his refusal to accept responsibility and a lack of remorse. He'll be eligible for parole again in February 2026. 77-year-old Kenneth Leidy is currently serving a sentence at the State Correctional Institution, Frackville, in Frackville, Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for listening to this week's podcast. Like we said in the opening, if you have any cold cases to suggest, please visit our website, criminallylisted.com. But that's all for this week. Thank you again for listening. Please take care of yourself and stay safe.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.